I'm joined by State Senator Daniel Biss of Evanston, Democratic candidate for governor in Champaign-Urbana on this Friday afternoon as we talk. Senator, what brings you to town today?
Well, we're having a whole series of events. So we just came from a lunch meet and greet hosted by Representative Carol Ammons, and we'll be in Mahomet tonight. And we're about to be holding a press conference as well to talk about the importance of using the state's resources to reflect our values and not to spend money on dirty energy and advance global warming.
Yeah, well, let's talk a little bit more about that, if you don't mind. In a situation where the state is in such financial difficulty, why do you think it is important to invest those state resources in what you call an environmentally responsible way?
Well, we need to use the state's remarkable resources to advance the values that are good for the people of Illinois. And I also think that the future of our economy is a clean energy economy, and it is a losing bet for the state to still be invested significantly in fossil fuels. And so we think that doing the right thing now will ultimately be the right thing economically as well as environmentally and morally. Now, we also have huge budget problems, which means we need progressive revenue sources to adequately fund our pension systems and our other priorities, and that's why I'm fighting for progressive income tax. It's why I'm the only candidate in this race fighting to tax transactions at the Chicago Board of Trade on LaSalle Street and to close the corrupt carried interest loophole that allows Bruce Rauner to pay a much lower tax rate than lots of working families.
Let's talk a little bit more about the progressive income tax. You're not the only candidate for governor who is advocating for that policy. But, of course, there are some obstacles to getting that done. It would take a constitutional amendment to pass to be able to have a progressive income tax. How do you go about getting that done?
Illinois is one of only four states in the country whose constitution says you have to have a flat income tax, whose constitution says that we're not allowed to ask Bruce Rauner with his $188 million 2015 salary to pay a higher tax rate than a teacher or a nurse. That doesn't make any sense. I'm the only candidate for governor with a record of fighting to enact a progressive income tax. I was the only candidate for governor who, in 2013 and 2014, tried to find the votes so we could make that constitutional change, and we came up just a few votes short, which is why I know that when I'm governor, with the additional ability of a governor to advocate for that kind of dramatic policy change, we'll be able to find those last few votes and finally have a tax system that works for the rest of us and not just the very wealthy.
What do you think that might look like in terms of tax rates? What would some of the different income levels be, different tax percentages? What would that look like in a Daniel Biss proposal?
You know, we've got to sit down and make sure that we're building a balanced budget, and that requires a lot of flexibility on a lot of different levels. But I think there's a few basic principles we ought to enact. Number one, in the last few decades, the amount of money that's gone to the very top, to millionaires and even billionaires, has gone through the roof. That's where the revenue is, and we haven't been taxing it adequately. Next, we overtax the middle class and the working poor in Illinois. And so if we were to have the kind of tax system that we should have, we would enable us to provide a lower tax rate for people who are struggling to make ends meet, for people who have not had a raise for a generation now, by bringing in that revenue from the very top, which is frankly where it is.
One of your competitors for this nomination, Bob Diber, did release some rates with a progressive income tax plan here in the last couple of weeks. Thoughts on the rates he proposed? Are those a good starting point? Any points of disagreement there with what Mr. Diber released?
You know, the problem with releasing a tax rate and nothing else is that it doesn't really explain how the budget's going to work. And so what we need to do is to sit down to articulate our priorities, to enumerate what they cost, and to build a fair tax system that funds those priorities. And I think to just stick a number in a spreadsheet without first having done that is probably putting the cart before the horse.
You mentioned the LaSalle Street tax, something that you've talked about, taxing transactions from the Chicago Mercantile Exchange Board of Trade. How would that work, and what kind of revenue do you think you'd be able to raise with a tax like that?
The tax that we've proposed is a dollar on each agricultural transaction, $2 on other transactions. It's an average of 0.001% of based on contract value. So it's a very small percentage tax, but because the volume is so high, it would bring in billions of dollars a year. And this is where the economy has gone. Our economy has become more financially based. Our economy is more tied up in the financial sector, and so our tax system should move along and follow it. Because we haven't done that, We've instead had to go back and continue to nickel and dime middle-class families and the working poor to fund government. That doesn't make any sense.
Moving on to slightly different topic here, President Trump made some comments yesterday in a meeting on immigration, using a vulgar slur to talk about African countries, to talk about Haiti. Just curious your response to what the president had to say in that meeting yesterday.
It's just beneath the dignity of being a human being to talk the way he did. You know, we can talk about whether it's presidential or not. Obviously, it's not. No human being should talk in that way. This is a racist president. This is a racist president. This is a president whose vision of America is a white America. It is dangerous. It is wrong. It is a violation of the core founding principles of our country. And we should acknowledge that we have never lived up to those core founding principles, but the purpose of our evolution as a nation and the role played by presidents is supposed to be to move us in that direction, and Donald Trump is moving us in the precisely wrong direction as fast as he can. And let me end here. Everyone should agree with what I just said. I don't need Paul Ryan to agree with me on health care. I don't need Rodney Davis to agree with me on tax policy. But when the president of the United States makes a clearly racist statement that is a violation of the core principles of this country, everyone needs to speak up clearly and loudly, and anyone who does not is complicit.
Beyond the remarks themselves, which obviously were vulgar in nature, what about the policy itself?
Great point.
What about the policy itself that the president's advocating for? In terms of, you know, you got the state of Illinois losing population as it is. What would more limiting immigration policies mean for the state of Illinois and the country at large?
And let's be clear, as far as I'm concerned, the issue is not the vulgarity. The issue is the content and the sentiment and the policy. I'm happy to hear the word shithole in a different context, just not in that context. And why? Because the entire Donald Trump campaign and presidency from the first minute he rode down that escalator has been about the whitening of America, has been about restricting immigration from some places because he wants America to be whiter. That is real. It's documented. It's clear. It's frankly, it's obvious, and it's wrong. Now, you nailed it in your question. The state of Illinois should want immigrants because the state of Illinois needs immigrants. We want our state to grow. We know that our state will thrive when population increases, when people come here from all over, when we are a more diverse and culturally vital place. And so these policies, they're not just ugly. They're harmful to our national and state interests.
We're speaking here on the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign campus, of course, and higher education in the state has been struggling, losing students to neighboring states. What can you as governor do to reverse that tide to keep more students in the state of Illinois?
Well, you know, Bruce Rauner has been a terrible governor for the state of Illinois, but he's probably the best governor that the University of Wisconsin ever had. He has resulted in Illinois students fleeing the state, going to our neighboring states because of a lack of funding for our public institutions of higher education and because of a lack of stability. High school guidance counselors across Illinois are saying to young people, don't apply to four-year public institutions in Illinois because who knows what it's going to look like in 4 years. It is unconscionable. So we need a stable budget. We went 2 years and 6 days with no budget under Bruce Rauner. That is beyond unacceptable. We need at a bare basement minimum a governor who's going to always have a sustainable state budget, but we need to do better. We need to fund education properly. We need to, over time, do away with tuition to public institutions of higher education because we should treat a higher education, since it's a necessity for so many people to participate equally in a modern economy, it should be treated as a right.
Final topic, as we run a little short on time here, pensions in the state, of course, unfunded liabilities, well over $100 billion with public pensions in the state. You mentioned some different ways to raise more revenue. Of course, some of that would go to paying those obligations. But in terms of the pensions themselves, what are some things that can be done to help bring that number a bit more under control?
Well, the first thing we should do is acknowledge how we got here. For not just years, but generations, the state failed to make the actuarially responsible payment into the pension system, skipping payments here, shorting the system there, not being willing to raise the revenue needed to actually fund our promises another time, instituting actuarially irresponsible 50-year funding ramps to shield politicians who were then in office from ever having to pay the bill. If we want to have a working pension system, we have to make sure that we have a binding guarantee that the actuarially responsible payments are made every year, not just sometimes, not just certain years, but every year. And then once we've done that, we better have a revenue system that allows us to bring in the funds needed to afford that. And if we do those two things, it's going to be a long, hard slog, but we will get out of this. If we don't do those two things, we're going to be in a lot of trouble.
Of course, there have been some attempts to reduce some of the liabilities through legislation, including a bill in 2013, the so-called swap, where people could decide whether to take a higher cost of living I forget what the other option was, but it was ruled unconstitutional. I know that was a bill that you voted for at the time, here about 5 years ago. Thoughts on that legislation that you voted for 5 years ago? Is that a vote you regret?
Well, I think we need to listen to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court has been clear and has spoken loudly, and I think it's important that we trust and respect that. And so, yes, I was wrong. Yes, I was wrong. And the question is, what lesson do we learn from it? And I think the lesson that we need to learn is to trust the Constitution and to preserve workers' rights, and to, instead of accepting when someone tells us we can't possibly afford this, we must instead find a way through bold revenue policies that tax those who can afford to pay their share to fund our priorities and fund our commitments. It can be done if we put our mind to it, and it's time to get to work.
And finally, before we let you go, I know one thing you've talked about a lot in this campaign is, you know, not wanting to go down the road of putting a billionaire on the ballot against a billionaire in the incumbent governor, Bruce Rauner. Why do you think that is such an important theme for your campaign?
Well, I think we've got to decide, do we want to have an election or do we want to have an auction? I think it's worrying that there are some parts of the Democratic Party that have said, hey, listen, the only way to beat a billionaire is with a billionaire, so I guess that's what we're going to go with. We need the person with the best ideas. We need the person who's best prepared to govern. And we need to have a democracy that doesn't assume that we can only have people with extraordinary means in public office. Because listen, the concentration of wealth and the concentration of power is unlike almost any other time in American history. Government needs to act as a tool to push back against that, to make sure that everyone's got a shot, to make sure that middle-class families and the poor have an ability to have a decent life. And this concentration of power that says the only people who can run government must be billionaires, that the people who can run government will not have any experience knowing what ordinary people live like and what choices ordinary people are confronted with during the course of their daily and weekly and monthly lives, that's a dangerous path to go down. I think this is a fight for the soul of the Democratic Party. We've got to decide, are we going to be a billionaire party or are we going to be a people's party? I think we better get that one right.
State Senator Daniel Biss, Democratic candidate for governor, joining me here on this Friday. Senator, thank you very much for your time today.
Hey, thanks for having me.